Welcome to Can I Nurse Time, the podcast celebrating scent detection for fun. Join us for insights into building a connection in your team, tips for competency and success in competition, and to keep up to date with recent and upcoming scent work events here in New South Wales and around Australia. Hi, Danielle.
Hello.
Let's have a chat about cross-training. Is that the right word? Cross-training?
Sure. training stuff that is not nose work.
Training multiple dog sports in relation to nose work.
Yep. That sounds good.
Yes.
Okay.
And we've had sort of chats. I think we've touched on it before, but we've never sort of gone into the weeds, the pros, the cons, should you do it, do you do it?
So, okay, well, would you want me to start with some thoughts?
Yes.
Okay, so I'm someone who wants to train all the things if my dog enjoys it, although I don't do a lot of other competitions. As much, I train all my dogs in a bit of obedience healing and rally skills, trick skills, all sorts. I don't just train nose work, I guess is what I'm saying. What about you?
And your household has four dogs, right? So is correct. That you're happy to do everything with all of them as long as they want to do it?
Yes. Well, I would say that each dog likes different things. So there's certain things that we all, like I get all the dogs to do, and those things would probably be like fitness conditioning exercises we do pretty regularly. Also healing, because I like training healing. So all my dogs learn to heal. But apart from that, it kind of just depends on the dog. So Nettle loves agility. So for her, I'm having to learn agility because I don't know anything about agility. But she loves it. So we're training in that. Rory, this is going to sound weird, but he really loves cooperative care, which I know some people think of as something to train. Other people don't really think of it as at all.
What's cooperative care?
So cooperative care is a bunch of skills to teach your dog to be happy with veterinary care and handling. If you think about training at a zoo, a tiger to accept a blood draw or something like that, It's like doing that with your dog. And there's actually like online kind of certifications and stuff you can do and skills that you can follow along to progress your dog and all this stuff. So like Rory, he can lie down on either side. He can have his feet bandaged. He can actually assume a position for a voluntary blood draw. He can, you know, he can do teeth handling and ears and all sorts of stuff. So I actually do that a lot with him because he likes it, which is weird, but he really likes it. He's my only dog who absolutely loves like giving me a paw, having his nails trimmed and all that stuff.
Wow. Yeah.
But Nettle hates that stuff.
I was like, how do you get a walker to do that?
I mean, and it's not that she hates that stuff. She just thinks it's boring, right? Because it's a lot of stillness. It's a lot of patience. And also there's a fair bit of impulse control in it, right? So although I have started the basic skills with Nettle, I haven't done a lot of advanced training on that with Nettle.
Hey, bored and trained with Flair. Excellent.
Yeah, and like other things I dabble with is stuff like retrieving skills, because with gun dogs you can do fun stuff with that, like directionals and, you know, retrieving different objects, and, you know, there's a bunch of fun stuff you can do with just that whole family of skills.
With the, you said the conditioning, does that take a lot of obedience to work with a dog doing conditioning?
I don't think it does necessarily. A lot of conditioning is just luring, like getting your dog into, like especially for the beginning stages, because also if you're using that lure effectively, you can be more certain about the position of your dog. Is their neck straight? Is their back straight? Do they have their feet on the right things? So I don't think you need like obedience skills per se to do conditioning though.
Okay, because they're two sort of things that I hadn't really even factored into cross training.
Yeah. Well, I'm just thinking of the things that I do with my dogs when I'm like, okay, I'm going to grab treats and like train my dogs. What do I do? And those are often the things I default to because all my dogs can do them. Yeah.
Okay, because, yeah, I guess generally when you think cross training, I'm thinking agility.
Yep.
You know, obedience, competition yep. or otherwise. Fly ball.
Yeah.
Do you play fly ball with any of your dogs?
I don't do fly ball, no. I do. So I am an obedience instructor, so I do train a lot of obedience. I have one of my dogs, Pippin, he got to rally excellent before he kind of had to retire due to injury because they have jumps in excellent and he had a neck injury. Yeah. So, and the thing is as well with cross training for me, a lot of my older dogs weren't suited to competition, right? Due to reactivity or stress or anxiety or just not really loving that whole scene. So that means that I could be a bit more creative with my cross training, I guess. I didn't need to train to a particular set of rules and criteria. I could just play around and have fun.
Hmm. Yeah. Okay. And I've been an obedience instructor in the past and my dog Sira really enjoyed obedience. And really the only reason I stopped taking to her obedience is because it clashed with nose work. And that ended up, you know, it was just too big a day for her and for me if we were doing obedience and nose work. But we did do obedience for a number of years and she did really enjoy it. I never saw any, I guess, fallout from her obedience to nose work. And I guess that was what sort of prompted this conversation was I think there are some things that you can learn in other sports, whether it's obedience or tricks. I think tricks is probably one of the main ones I see that do sometimes make an appearance when your dogs are doing nose work. And they generally appear when the dogs are either unsure of the task or the handler is a little slow in their rewarding. I think that's probably the two main times that I see, you know, other things appear.
what kinds of things do you see happen?
I think the main things I see, and it's not necessarily an obedience or a cross training thing, but is focus, like eye contact back to the handler. And I think that can happen at any time in a search, maybe when the dog is a little unsure or they've caught an odor and they're looking at the handler going, do you smell that? Like, or that, like, you know, and dogs that maybe are a little bit more, you know, cued into their handler, that's probably one of the biggest ones. And the ironic thing is that the majority of people have a look back when it comes to a final response. So, yeah, contact, eye contact. The other one would be paws on a box or a, you know, jumping up on a box. I think that happens a lot. And I think they're probably the two main things I see that I feel like that sometimes that there's a lack of clarity for the dogs in those situations.
Do you ever see in trialing setting people sort of slipping into some of the other sort of training modes?
I think that's the other that just reminded me what else. Healing. Often when the dog is a little unsure or they're finished, sometimes they'll pop themselves into a bit of a heel. Or when the handler takes off from a hide and the dog, you know, the handler takes over the search when they leave a hide, the dog automatically goes into a heel position. And I think it happens more with newer dogs and newer teams where the context and the clarity isn't quite there yet. But I think it is something that handlers could be a little bit more aware of, what they're training and how they're training nose work. And that comes back to foundations, I think.
I think so too. Because my opinion is you can train your dog to do as many sports as you want as long as your dog has that clarity of what sport they're playing at any time, right? You know, in that nose work setting, your dog doesn't need their tricks or an obedience heel or anything like that. And so if those things are being prompted, I think that that is a training issue.
Yes, I agree. I agree. And I think, and it's funny that I agree because this is like something that we sort of do disagree on. You know, just I remember when you got Nettle, we had a conversation and you're like, when do you start agility? And I'm like, after nose work. And your agility instructor's like, make sure you start agility first.
Yes. Yeah. It is funny because I think that I think people have, depending on whatever sport is kind of your primary sport, I guess, you definitely have a big list of foundation skills. So if your focus is agility, you have a list of those foundation skills that you want in place. Same with obedience. And nose work is the same. There's like a list of foundational things you want your dog to be focused on whilst they're growing up. And I guess the question is, do any of those lists sort of affect each other or clash even?
Well, I think there is a bit of a clash, but I think there's more a clash in the human's understanding of how important those foundations are. Like for agility, and I don't know a lot about agility, but, you know, contact or, you know, things like that, there's a very obvious visual use for putting into, you know, getting those foundations really strong before you go out and run your dog in agility. Whereas I think in nose work, it can be a little bit more subtle than that. You know, like a lot of people go on to odor before they have a dog's understanding of a scent picture or how to problem solve or the drive to get into and motivation to go into a search. And if your dog doesn't have those, then you're opening yourself up to all of these other things that you've built so strongly in your agility or obedience foundations.
Yeah, absolutely. And I think the cool thing about nose work is that actually I think the best dogs are dogs that have a strong sense of themselves and have like confidence within themselves to problem solve, to navigate an environment. And I think that that can be missing. I think people take it for granted that their dog can do that problem solving, going into a strange environment, you know, all of the little things that need to be generalized to have a strong searching dog. I think people take it for granted that their dog can just do that because they're good at agility or they're good in obedience class or whatever, because a lot of times we don't simply let dogs just be dogs, right? Like foundation, nose work one, week one, we've just started a new week of classes and, you know, I've just had a new class starting. And for many people coming into a room, letting their dog off lead and just telling their dog go find stuff, it's like a really foreign experience for the dog. They're not used to just being told it's on you, go do the thing, go, you know, solve it, be your own dog. It's so I think that having like when you're talking about building foundations for a searching dog, I think it is a lot of just letting them grow up, you know, and experience the world and feel like they have some control over things and having that self-confidence.
And we're doing the puppy class, the puppy sniffy class at the moment. Mm. And, you know, during those first couple of weeks, we, as a class, we had that conversation about you find out so much about your dog when you sort of hand it over to them.
Yeah.
And like, you really see what, you know, the little personality traits when they're the ones leading the search or they're the ones that are, you know, as the handlers in puppy class, I think we've used a lead once. And it's been really good to sort of see exactly what our dogs are like
mm-hmm.
without us in the picture.
Yep.
And those little personality, every single one of them has a little personality and it comes out in the way that they search, which I think is really, really fascinating and shows you exactly not just the gaps. I mean, I think it's sort of funny because Flair's my puppy. Flair is such a, you know, so wriggly that he'll be, you know, dedicated to the searching, and then he'll see a person and he'll run up and he'll wriggle, wriggle, and then he'll run back to searching. And it's like, wow, you know, dedication and focus is something that we're going to have to build during his, you know, down the line. It's not something I want to, you know, worry too much about now, but just building it gradually over time, that's a skill that I want him to have before we go anywhere near Oda.
Mm-hmm.
That's a skill I want him to build on primary and have fun, and for me to find out more about him and just, you know, explore all of that and build those foundations really strong before I throw him onto Oda. And I had a student in a class this week that she sort of just, it was a passing comment that a friend of hers had, you know, her dog, and with this class has been going for you know, probably 2 years now, maybe a little bit longer. And they're on all three Odas, but they're still very much sort of beginner dogs, I guess. And that we have spent a lot of time on foundation and building and as a group. And she sort of made a passing comment about a friend of hers that basically put her dog on Oda in a week or two and competed a week or two later and passed all her novice no problem. And I sort of, it made me just think a little bit that yes, you can do that. It's not complicated to put your dog on Oda, and you probably can go in and knock out all your novice, fairly straightforward, you know, putting your dog on Oda like that. But it did get me thinking, you know, what happens down the track when the puzzles become a little bit more complicated and that dog needs a little bit of endurance, and, you know, that's when cross training things might start to pop up for a dog like this, and false alerts start happening and behavior at containers starts happening, and, you know, a lot more when there's confusion for the dog, they're going to go to the handler for the answer, and that you don't want.
Yeah, that's a really good point, because so pretty much everything else I train with my dogs, I literally think of it as it's just a trick. Healing is just a trick. Stays are just a trick. Agility is all a bunch of different tricks, right? But to me, nose work isn't just a trick. Like, yeah, you could train it that way. And like you say, knock out novice searches, training it really quickly as a trick. But for me, nose work is more than that. Like, it's more about giving your dog like this one part of their life that they get to be a dog.
That we don't take over.
No, it's not a trick for them to search. Like, it's part of their DNA to get out there and use their nose and hunt something down, right? So I don't want it to be a trick, because I don't want to take away from that sort of the instinctiveness of it. And the other thing is that I don't think it should be the same for every dog, right? Because every dog has a different way of searching. And I think if you just go in it with the mentality of, I'm going to train this sort of trick, you might have a picture in your head that actually isn't suited to your dog.
Yeah. And I do think it's different, but we have had discussions before about, like, when we were thinking of putting the puppies onto Oda and, you know, how it will be different maybe for all of them.
Yes, I think it will be.
Yeah. And there's so many boxes that I want to tick first before I go down that path, but I also don't want to overthink it. And
no, you know. But I don't think it should be overthought. I think it should just be like, enjoy the journey. Do you know what I mean? Like, enjoy the experience of it, and don't crush your puppy's joy in that by having sort of timelines and, like, you know, the external goal of, you know, a trial. I don't think, whilst it is fun to aim towards that, and trials are fun for us,
are they?
And hopefully for our dogs. You know, it shouldn't be the reason. I don't think it should be the reason why you're doing it, I guess. That's and just my opinion.
You know, food and toys is so self-rewarding and so fun.
Yeah.
Like, it's pretty difficult to sap the joy out of that. but we can do that when it's just odor. We really can weigh that. And you know, all of those skills, if by jumping or rushing the foundations in nose work, and I think people don't realize how important the foundations are compared to other sports. They are just as important or even more important for nose work than other sports, because the problem solving, I know that, you know, food has different pressure, air pressure, vapor pressure than odor, and it does move differently, but still all of those skills are built using foundation, you know, using primary and toys. Wrapping a car, how much more fun and how much, you know, more context and instant reward there is teaching a dog to wrap a car on primary than, you know, when we throw in odor. I mean, we can still do it with odor, but just watching that understanding and that self-learning happen so much better on primary, I don't think people give that enough time.
And like you say, it is that joyful picture you want, right? Like I still look back, I've got all these cute videos of Nettle doing food searches in lots of different places. And the thing I love is that she still looks exactly the same now when she's searching for odor as she did then, right? But she did so much food searching. Like I did put her on odor quite early because I wanted to go to camp, but she did food searches like every day in all different locations. She did a lot of intensive food searching.
Well, that, I guess that's a different conversation too, because I mean, she was 9 months old, but your training with her was probably more than, you know, someone that goes to class twice a week.
Exactly. Yeah.
Your training would have been, you know, daily or more, more than the average person does.
The thing and just the thing I found with Nettle, she was a difficult puppy. She's a working cocker and she is a high drive working cocker. And primary searches were literally like my lifeline to survive puppyhood with her. I used them as enrichment and a way to exhaust her and tire out her little brain and body. So, yeah, so that I did a lot of them, probably way more than the average person would do.
Yeah. Yeah. And I think that, you know, hours spent doing foundation and on primary, and that counts towards, I think, the decision that you would make to put your dog onto odor.
Yes. Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. But like, and like you say, it's going to be different for every single team, right? Every single dog is going to be different, because I think dogs also mature at very different rates, varying breed to breed and individual to individual. And, you know, people have different priorities. That's fine.
Yeah. I mean, it's just so much fun watching the dog search for food and for primary. And you always, like you said, Nettle looks exactly the same searching for odor as she did for food. And that, I think, as an instructor, and that's what I see in class, is that sometimes that gets that picture and that great, you know, that puppy or the dog and absolutely loved just searching for food.
Yep.
Sometimes that doesn't look quite the same, and you want it to look just about the same.
Yep.
You want that your dog to be just as excited to run in and search for odor as they were for food.
Yep.
And that's up to us as the handlers to keep that picture.
So I guess people might be thinking, well, how do I build all these skills on primary searching? Like what kinds of things can you be throwing at puppies to develop all these skills?
Well, it's easy for me because I go to puppy sniffy class. Danielle's the instructor at puppy sniffy class.
I am the instructor at puppy sniffy class.
So I think some of the, I guess we're up to the point now where we're actually starting to build some duration.
Mm-hmm.
I think you can do absolutely everything that you need to do on odor, you can do on primary. And that comes down to converging odors. You can do heights. You can do, you know, except for maybe inaccessibles.
Mm.
you know, don't do that to your dog.
No.
If there's a really great way to get a paw on a box, it's by sticking a piece of
glue. Yeah, let's not do any accessibles.
Let's not do that. You know, problem solving.
Yeah.
Barrier searches.
Yeah.
You know, your boxes all over the place, box forts.
Yeah.
Your rubble piles, like all of these things, like building the confidence of your dogs. Like we've seen so much of this over the last couple of weeks that every single one of them has built those skills just through the environment, hide placement.
And I think the other thing that's super important is like the context and of search focus, right? Because the main thing, like you said with the puppies, right, when we brought them in those first few weeks, they're like, woohoo, people running around, not quite sure what I'm doing. But, and we don't correct them for that. We don't necessarily even re-cue them. We just let them find their own way back to the searching, and the search is rewarding, right?
Mm.
And you can see week on week that they're learning. They're like this last week, their endurance for searching was amazing.
Oh my goodness.
They just kept at the problems. They weren't distracted. If they were distracted, it was only momentarily. And then they themselves took themselves back to the searching.
Mm.
And that's what's really cool.
And it's all happening as a group too. So you can see skills developing over from all of them.
Mm.
And speaking of the cues, like that search cue is something I've only sort of just brought in the last couple of weeks with Flair. The first couple of weeks, it didn't bother me at all. But see, that to me is part of that picture that you're building for your dog down the line. All of these things, you know, just your start line routines.
Yep.
You know, by the time they get to odor, I feel like they're going to have a very good understanding of what the task is.
Totally. And, you know, like I said with Nettle, that find that I did with like those hundreds of food searches, that just totally translates to odor searches now. I say find it, and it's just this conditioned response of I'm going out in the environment to find my stuff.
Up she goes.
Yes. And like that's what you can be building, right? And it's not about an obedience cue. It's like that sort of classical conditioning of like, this word means fun and joy.
And that's, I think, the whole point of this conversation really is to make sure that when your dogs are on odor and they're down the line solving all these problems, is that they have just as much love for the game and they're searching really happily. You know, how good is it to watch a dog just so excited to get out there and find odor and watch them so dedicated to an odor puzzle that nothing else is, they're not thinking about anything else.
Yep.
And that's what I want to see in, you know, in new students coming through and in the dogs that I'm running. Yeah.
But I guess also just to bring it back to the cross training, I think you can still have that crazy searching dog who is like Nettle, just total joy and craziness, but you can still have a nice little obedience skill and you can train all the agility handling stuff. That doesn't necessarily detract from it if there is clarity in what you're training and when you're doing it.
Well, we tried to disagree on a topic, and we've sort of come back to actually agreeing because I think it is all about clarity.
Yeah. Yeah. And I will also say that for me as well, it's probably a lot to do in the way you teach the other skills. Like, obviously, I am a very motivational trainer, whatever I'm training. So my obedience stuff, there's no harsh corrections. There's no compelling or coercing a dog to do stuff. So I think that also is an important part of the picture, because I think maybe some of that pressure stuff can leak into nose work if you're not aware of it.
Yeah, yeah. Yeah, and I think some default behaviors can definitely cross over to nose work. So, and then
because what I find really interesting is when a dog thinks they haven't done it right, and you can kind of see it in them that they deflate a bit, and I don't ever want my dog to feel that way, regardless of what I'm training. Like, I don't want my dog to be deflated when they get something wrong in agility or obedience or nose work. So to me, it's actually more important how you're training the things rather than what specifically you're training.
Yes. Yeah.
Does actually, make sense?
That made me just think of, I was listening to Amy Hero speaking this morning about it was a container exercise, and it was lots of distractors. And she was talking about how she re-rewards when the dog goes back to Oda. And it was such a great example, because it was like Oda gets alert, gets rewarded, pizza, cheese, you know, hamburger, ignored it all, Oda. Mm-hmm. And the handler goes, find another. And the dog's like, what? I just ignored pizza, cheese, and hamburger. Yeah. You're telling me that this isn't good enough.
Yeah.
And I was just like, yeah, you want your reward that dog.
Yeah.
Yeah. And I think that just helps to make it clear exactly what is rewardable and what.
Yeah. Net. Yeah.
Yeah.
Absolutely.
Which comes back to reward timing, I think, is so important in nose work, because, you know, there's so many people that feel like they need to wait until that, final response, and they forget that Oda is the rewardable opportunity.
Well, yes. And I'm looking down at our list of podcast topics, and we do have trained final responses and alerts on our list. So we can definitely talk about that.
Let's go into
that. In another podcast.
Let's go into those ones another day.
Okay, so in summary, to wrap up, we started talking about training lots of different things with your dogs. For some reason, we went down a rabbit hole of cooperative care.
Well, that was training different things.
It is training different things.
Right.
And I would like to encourage all people to train that, because I think it is really fun for you and your dogs and worthwhile.
Wish I had trained that.
And we then talked about how all these different dog sports have different sort of foundational skill sets. And nose work particularly has a lot of foundational skills that people may not even realize are important.
They're definitely not as visually, you know, that you can't see them as well.
No. Because like I say, I think it's a lot within the dog. I think you're kind of building up the dog in a sense.
Mm. And it's almost like that errorless learning for nose work. It builds up so slowly you don't notice it.
Yep.
You don't notice it until you don't have it.
Hopefully that's not the case.
Yeah. But yeah, the cross-training thing, I think, and I did talk about a few of the things that I've seen in classes, and I think it's dog specific, and I think it's, you know, it's not across the board, but I do think it's good for people to be aware of it and not to reinforce some of those things in the context of nose work.
Yep. Yep. And to have that clarity for your dog.
Mm. And don't be afraid to go back to the foundations and build them up again, because dogs love foundations.
Yep. Yep.
Yeah.